Brothers and sisters, before the start of the talk, just an announcement for this Sunday, 30th November at 11 o'clock in the morning. We are holding a special lunch dinner because of Reverend Sada's birthday. So there will be a potluck. And if you have any inquiry or clarification, please contact Sister Fu or Sister Kelly. All right. And that is the announcement. Good evening and welcome, Brother Theo and friends. And also good evening, brothers and sisters in the Dharma. Tonight, as you know, the title is Knowing and Seeing. Meditation, the word meditation has various meanings. And when we look at those words, knowing and seeing, at a certain conceptual side, you can also find that when you know something, you don't really see. Or you see something, but do not know. Here we are concerned with meditation practice, and in meditation practice there are so many different methods. But our concern here is the meditation practice that would lead us to enlightenment. That's our objective. And you can say that with the Dharma knowledge, I believe you would agree that this meditation practice far surpasses any other methods and objective of meditation practices. Alright? So before taking up much time, this knowing and seeing, when we meditate, we may see things, but do we know? And if we know, do we see? I think this I leave it to Brother Theo to explain, especially in this insight meditation. Okay? And as usual, it is good to let us take refuge in the triple jhana and observe precepts. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo
ากมือนะ
Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. It has been quite a while since the last talk, eh? I think 1 month plus. So tonight we have the condition together again. Tonight's topic is more unique. I was given this topic by Brother Gan. The title is Knowing and Seeing. So I say,This topic is good. Then I ask him, why you ask for this topic? You don't tell me why, I will explain the way I understand. Then it may be totally different from what you maybe have an idea of. So luckily he sent me one e-book. So this one was regarding, I think, one of the very renownedMeditation master that conduct a retreat in Taiwan, and because of their retreat, they wrote this e-book. They compiled the whole thing. Then I read the introduction. Then I saw they base it on this sutta that the Buddha talk about, Sabba Asavak Sutta. Have you heard of this sutta? Anybody haven't heard about this sutta?Oh, what is it? The rest all heard before. Maybe I write it down, easier. The Buddha spoke this Sabba Asavak Sutta. What is Asavak? Asavak is what?
Defilements.
The various type of defilements. There are a few Pali words that they use for defilement. The other one that you heard of is anusaya. This one you heard before, isn't it? What is this? Latent tendency. These are latent tendencies that lay dormant within the mind.You have those tendencies because unless you already awaken. Otherwise, these latent tendencies, they are always there. But they don't arise because there is no condition as well, when nobody disturbs you. Or there is no condition for you to react or to activate it. So there are many teachers who use different terms. Like Eckhart Tolle.He used the word pain body, remember? Pain body. Actually, the meaning is the same. Pain body are emotional negativity. When you touch, there is pain, there is suffering, there is reaction. But he says sometimes the pain body is dormant. Dormant means you don't feel the pain. When conditions are very conducive,Like when things go your way, you're going through your life in a normal way, no bad news, nothing disturb you, then you are like, okay, you have good life, happy life, peaceful life. But then whenever there is condition for it to trigger on, when there is some happening or bad news or whatever that trigger on, then this thing affects you. The Buddha call it the first noble truth reality.When you confront without understanding, without wisdom, it will lead to suffering. So the first noble truth of dukkha has 8 conditions that can cause suffering when living beings confront them without wisdom or understanding. So this is one type of asava, anasana, latent tendency, lay dormant inside.The other one is kilesa. You heard of this, isn't it? This one is a very common word, isn't it? Kilesas are normal defilements. And they are associated with what? Huh? Associated with what? Ah, very good. Associated with the three evil roots. Huh? These three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they are very powerful. So these are the three commonly used words, yeah, by the Buddha. But in this sutta, the Buddha chose asavak. Actually, asavak carry a very heavy meaning of defilement and so on. These are very strong, what they call defilement, no? Especially for people with a lot of delusion, a lot of anger, hatred, a lot of desire, possessiveness, covetousness, yeah, lustful type of what they call character or demeanor. So asava is more towards the very strong type, very impulsive type. It's just like in Cantonese, huh? They say Thai lim sun ngan, you understand? In Hokkien is what? Cantonese got this discussion, sun ngan, means when he see, he not happy. He just want to tell you all, and he just want to react to whatever he see here all. So these are very strong, what they call outflow of defilement, as well. So when it comes to asava, there are many, many layers. Many layers. Yeah. So asava is all included. Understand not? Impulsive, aggressive. Yeah. Then whether latent or not latent, then some become transgression. It's not only at the thought level, not only at the thinking level, but it has actually transgressed into action and speech. Then it turned into hatred. Very strong ill will and hatred, leading to all the evil action and speech. Very powerful. So the Buddha under this sutta, he mentioned this. He said, for a cultivator, yeah, or a meditator, or a monk, yeah, or a lay cultivator or practitioner, he said, destruction of asava, yeah, the complete destruction of asava can only take place in one who sees. In one who knows and sees. Not in one who doesn't know and doesn't see. That's how this title come about. Knowing and seeing. Then in the sutta is mentioned, know what, see what. So this is a very important understanding, so that when you develop your meditation, yeah, you can do it in accordance. Then this sutta is very special, because the Buddha actually gave detailed explanation, and it linked what he taught, so that this sutta, when you understand, you can develop the understanding of how his teaching come about and how you should develop it. That's why it's very unique. That's why this sutta is very powerful. And people like to quote this sutta because it's like authority. And if I'm not wrong, the renowned master, they like this book, Visuddhimagga. You heard of this book, Visuddhimagga? Seven Stages of Purification, Sutta Visuddhi. Written by Bhikkhu Buddhaghosa, not Buddhadasa, Buddhaghosa. Yeah. They like this particular one. Yeah. But the explanation is according to different people's understanding. Yeah. But based on what I understand, I will share with you. It's quite easy for you to actually develop the understanding. Here, seeing, we start with seeing. Seeing means what? How do you see? Huh? If you want to have penetrative insight to develop the wisdom, How does the seeing come about? Huh? Very good. You must have direct seeing, Anasala. So this one is direct seeing, not mundane seeing. Mundane seeing is you see with the consciousness, the mundane mind. So this direct seeing is different from mundane seeing. Mundane seeing is you see with your thought, with your memory, with your conditioning, with your views and opinion, with all the words and concepts. Means you don't see things as they are. You don't see truth. You don't see the reality. When you see things as they are, without word, without concept, that is the direct seeing. So this direct seeing is very important. Direct seeing will allow you to see things as they are. Means you look into truth, the reality. Seeing as they are. Means you see truth, the reality. So when you are able to see things as they are, you see truth and you see the reality. Without any movement of thought, your mind has clarity, not clouded by any thinking, not preoccupied with some emotion or some thinking or thought process. Means you are heedful. You are not heedless. The heedless, they are lost in thought. The heedful are mindful, aware, silent, just aware. So this direct seeing is very important. Then knowing here, the word is, to me, is an English word, but it's not so appropriate. This word should be understanding. It depends on how you use word. Because understanding is not knowledge, understand not? This word knowing comes from the word knowledge, understand not? Understand not? Knowledge is what? Rigid. Knowledge is like you have certain knowledge about certain things. So these are intellectual knowledge. And these are like very commonly accepted society's norm. Like the capital of Malaysia is Kuala Lumpur, and these are knowledge. But when it comes to understanding, it's not rigid. Understanding means the moment you understand, you know what this thing is, and you can approach it from any direction, the understanding is still there. But knowledge is different. Knowledge when situation is different, that knowledge that is rigid cannot apply anymore. It's just like one size fits all. Everybody is different. You cannot say this is the best size of t-shirt or wear shorts or long pants. Yeah, everyone is different. So when you meet situation that brings about different condition behind, you need to have wisdom, which is an understanding, it's not a knowledge. So this word, because it's an English translation, so it depends on how you understand it. But if you understand it as understanding or wisdom, then it's okay. Then this one stands. So knowing and seeing can be translated as understanding and seeing. Means you not only understand, you understand through direct seeing. Understand? You develop wisdom through your direct seeing, through your insight into phenomena. That's why the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or anatta or empty nature, they will arise. And this direct seeing is very different from mundane seeing. So this one you need to cultivate mindfulness, heedfulness, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. You just aware, fully aware, moment to moment. Then you have to build it up until it becomes upacara samadhi. So this is how the sutta comes about, and this is how the sutta originated. Then what I will do is, I will go through the sutta with you. Yeah? There are actually 7 ways that the Buddha talked about. Yeah? Within the sutta, where you need to develop wisdom to counter all this asava, or what they call defilements. So the first one, the Buddha said, you need to approach it with right attention. Some book they put right seeing or right vision. Yeah. But this is more appropriate, right attention. Then after that you have what they call the second one. Second one is destruction of asava. Yeah? There are many, many ways that you have to develop wisdom, especially contemplative wisdom. And the last one is through the development of the 7 factors of enlightenment, which is by cultivation and by development, they call it. This second one is, there is what they call, restraint. Then the third one is endurance. Eh? Endurance. Eh? Leading to acceptance. Then the fourth one is usage. Oh, how do you spell that? Oh, A-G-E, yeah. Usage. Fifth one is avoidance. Sixth is removal. Then the last one is via development or cultivation. Okay, before we go into this, can you roughly, based on what you understand, let me know, how does the Buddha actually teach you to develop wisdom to counter the first noble truth, suffering? Based on what you have learned so far, and also all the talk that I have shared with you. The first noble truth is what? Noble truth of suffering, isn't it? What has the Buddha taught you under the teaching? What are the things you're supposed to develop and cultivate so that you can develop wisdom to overcome this first noble truth suffering? It's an indirect answer to this sutta, understand not? What are the 3 types of wisdom that you can develop? What are the 3 types of wisdom that you can develop that the Buddha spoke about? The first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. What did he mention? 4 noble truths. Yeah? He said you must cultivate the 3 turnings of the 4 noble truths that will develop the 3 types of corresponding wisdom. Remember? First turning lead to what? Suttamaya Panya. Understand? After hearing the sutta, well, during that time you can only hear, then if you develop wisdom, you awaken. The first turning wisdom is called Sutamaya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Wisdom born of hearing the sutta and the sound, which are the discourse of the Buddha. So the first teaching is the three turnings. Three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. So this three turning is very important. It will give rise to the three types of corresponding wisdom. Wisdom. So you will have Sutamaya Panya, Sutamaya Panya, Cintamaya Panya, and last one is what? Bhavana Maya Panya. Okay? Apart from the three turning, what else did he ask the monk to do? Every day you must do. What are they? Contemplate on what? Yes, very good. Five daily contemplation. That's why you will come to know why he teach like that. And they are all related to this sutta. If you don't do this, you cannot understand what he say under this sutta, I tell you. Yeah. But because you do this, you develop this type of wisdom, you will have the ability to develop the knowing and seeing. Means through the reflection and contemplation and the three turning type of cultivation, you develop wisdom. The first turning gives rise to Sutamaya Panya. Sutamaya Panya can also be very penetrative if you have cultivated before, understand not? In your past, if you have developed the cultivation before. That's why when Kondanya, immediately he heard the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, before the Buddha finished, he was already a Sotapan. Then after that, when the Buddha continued with the second sutta, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, all five become arahant. How come so fast? Only through listening, no? It's because they cultivate before, understand? That's why they can be very penetrative. Then Cittamaya Panya also same. The Buddha said, after you listen to what he like expound or teach, if you still cannot develop the type of wisdom because your past parami is not stable, not strong enough. So what must you do? Is it? You must reflect, contemplate, and inquire into what the Buddha teach. Remember? Second turning, he got all the Four Noble Truths. He gave different emphasis to all the Four Noble Truths. Remember? First Noble Truth, he said, this Noble Truth of suffering or dukkha is to be what? To be understood. You have to ask, why did the Buddha say that under the second turning? And then from there, you develop the inquiry. You will come to understand why he said that. And so, then after that, how can I understand this first noble truth? So you have to reflect and contemplate on what the Buddha said under this first noble truth. Can you remember? He said the eight conditions, birth, old age, sickness, and death is suffering. When you cannot get what you want, that is suffering. When there is separation from loved ones and choice, possession, or whatever that you hold on to dearly, that also can lead to suffering if you do not have the wisdom. Then when things don't go your way, when your expectations are not met, it can also lead to suffering. Then he summarized all of suffering, is it in short? It is due to this craving, that condition grasping to this five aggregate of form and mind that I call suffering. This final summary is very important. Why did the Buddha say that? How can I understand? When you inquire, then you will come to know. If I don't understand what is suffering, what will happen to you when you come to this world? you will become miserable there, because you will be caught in the midst of suffering as you confront this eighth reality without knowing that it is suffering. That's why the Buddha wants you to reflect, contemplate, and cultivate this understanding, so that when you confront them, you know that they will lead to suffering if you don't develop wisdom, if you don't develop the direct seeing and develop the understanding. It will torment you. It will create a lot of suffering in you. You will have sorrow, lamentation, fear, worry, anxiety, unhappiness. All this will afflict you. So the teaching is very simple. If you know how to reflect and contemplate, then all this understanding will come. We come back to the final summary of the First Noble Truth. He said, in short, it is due to our self-delusion that condition our craving to grasp and cling onto this five aggregate of form and mind that he calls suffering. So how can you develop the understanding of this truth? This First Noble Truth, final summary. Because you have to investigate into what he said, isn't it? You don't believe him, isn't it? You need to investigate so that it will stand up to the investigation, so that your faith is strengthened. So how do you investigate? Investigate through what? Through reflection, contemplation, as an inquiry. So if I want to understand whether this statement is true or not, the final summary, what must you do? You must ask yourself, what is this five aggregate of form and mind there? Clear not? Clear not? Otherwise, how will you put to test? Then what did the sutta say? He just tell you, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vinyana, these are the five aggregate. You cannot get hit or tail, I tell you. The two aspects of it, you can never develop it unless you cultivate before. That's why what I was able to share with you, the two aspects, you can check the book. Hardly any book, right? But because if you were to inquire, contemplate and reflect, you will understand what this form of mind is all about, what this human being is all about, what this living being is all about. Then when you break them into the five aggregate, first aspect is as a human being, you have a physical form. This is your form aggregate. You have a mind trapped inside. The mind has this ability. It can feel, it can perceive, it can arise thinking, thought consciousness. Then it can also arise all the views and opinion, all the mental states, mental intention, whatever that the mind can do. Then it can become conscious of things. So these are the other four aggregates. So the physical body and the mind, together, they form the first aspect as a human being, the five aggregate. Then you put the test. If I attach to the first aggregate of this physical form, do I suffer? You suffer, isn't it? Because if you think this is you, deludedly, you will worry about it getting old, getting sick and die, isn't it? You will attach to it, you will cling onto it. If anything were to happen to this form, you are afflicted. You will have fear, worry, anxiety. That's why old age, sickness, and death can be very traumatic for people who don't have this type of wisdom through meditation. If you don't develop the second turning wisdom through constant mindful, heedful reflection, contemplation, and inquiry during the quiet moments when you are in a retreat place or when you are at home alone. That's why you need to develop all the spiritual faculty, then the enlightenment factors. Then you use it to investigate Dhamma. Without sati, the first factor of enlightenment developed, you cannot go to the second factor of enlightenment, which is Dhamma investigation or Dhamma vichaya. So these are sequence that goes. So after you understand what this five aggregate of form and mind is, then you move on, understand now? And you put it to test. If I attach to all the feeling that arise, pleasant, unpleasant, painful feeling, pleasant feeling, like and dislike, do I suffer? If I have preference for certain type of feeling, do I suffer? You can find out yourself. You can actually investigate into it. Because every feeling that arise, no matter how pleasurable, how wonderful that state is, it is going to change. It is going to transform. Understand? So if you attach and cling on to all this state and expect it to be repeated, and when you cannot get what you want, what happens? Suffering will follow you. Then you will understand that no matter how pleasurable, how fantastic the meditative state is, that's why I always say they are only conditioned state, condition arising, impermanent. They will come to pass. Then if you attach and cling, thinking that this is good meditation, this is what you must realize and have, then you equate it as enlightenment or progress, you will become. Because every feeling that arises, no matter how pleasurable and how wonderful, is a prelude to suffering, because it is going to change. It is going to follow nature's condition. It is in a state of flux, continuous changing, effervescent, constantly evolving. So nothing is eternally permanent except the unconditioned. So when you start to develop this contemplative wisdom, then later through the direct seeing, through your meditation, the third turning, you will develop a lot of wisdom and understand that you will know what they are. There are three universal characteristics. You will penetrate them clearly. The direct seeing will allow you to see them clearly. Then you will understand them clearly. Because this direct seeing will lead to awakening. Then when you awaken, it is a wisdom. It's no longer deluded. The form and mind is no longer deluded. So nothing can delude or deceive this form and mind into negativity anymore. So that's why the destruction of asava is possible. Asana. Then this five daily contemplation, as you all know, it helps you to counter all of the first noble truth, reality. First three is what? Regarding the form, the body. This body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. 4 years not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. It's made up of element. No. Cannot be me. Anatta lakkhana very clearly explain all this. Because the Buddha asks, is form permanent? Is feeling permanent? All the aggregates. If they are not permanent, because you, under the meditation, you will know, they keep on changing, evolving, come and go, feeling also come and go, perception also come and go. But every time they disappear, you never die with it. So they are not you. If they are not you, and if they are impermanent, then who are you? What are you? That's why you need to meditate, inquire deep to understand clearly why this five aggregate of form and mind, they have these universal characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering. And because they are impermanent, they cannot be a permanent and changing entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, and say, this is I, this is me, this can be mine. Then you will understand that this five aggregate of form and mind, they are empty. They are not really a person. Eternally unchanging person. That with an atta inside there. There is no such thing. Everything is dependent, originating. The dwelling, you will see them clearly. So through meditation, all this understanding will come about. Then you will come to know. This form is made of element, no knowing. That's why it cannot be you. And element go the way of nature. That's why you say this body of ours is the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So when you confront this reality where this form is not you, you should endure. Understand? This is the meaning of endure. Understand? You must endure whatever pain, whatever unhappy states that arise through old age, sickness and death. Because not only you subject to this reality. Each and every living being, if you live long enough, you have to experience old age, sickness and death. Asana. Then the Buddha said, you got two choices. Asana. Accept this reality, accord and flow with the nature's law, then do what you have to do to resolve it amicably so that it does not torment you so much, so that your mind state can be more peaceful, anasana. If you need to see a doctor to seek a cure, you seek a cure. But before the cure comes, you have to endure, anasana. Well, you got two choices. One, accept and at peace. Second choice is react, become miserable, anasana. Or the worst is to project your thought. Yeah. Project your thought is this one. Wrong attention. Means things that are unfit for attention, you go and attend to it. Like when you are confirmed, you got disease, you got sickness. Then suddenly the doctor do a biopsy, then confirm. Cancer, terminal, quite bad. What happened? Instead of having second opinion to confirm this reality, your thoughts start to what? You start to project your thought. You attend to things that are no longer a reality. So that is wrong attention. You project your thought and trigger what? Fear, worry, anxiety. Then you become miserable. But the reality is, these are first noble truth reality of life and existence. The form will go that way. When condition is not right, disease will arise. And when disease arises, you need to develop the understanding that this is part of the bodily sickness. Understand not? Then the Buddha said what? When your body is sick, do not what? Do not allow your mind also to be sick. Remember that? This is how you reflect and contemplate. But you go and project and worry about it, your mind is more sick than your body. Understand not? Then you got fear. Fear is what? Negative energy field. That's why your immune system will go down. Everything will go haywire. So the Buddha said, if you have wrong attention, you project your thought, you attend to things that are not fit for attention, means you don't develop wisdom through the direct seeing and the understanding. You never meditate, you never contemplate, you never develop this wisdom, then you will attend to things that are unfit for attention, then it will bring about all this suffering. Then the Buddha give a lot of example. After I will read to you, what are the things that are unfit for attention? One of them is thought projection that I just share with you. Yeah. So if you don't understand all this, the Buddha say when you have wrong attention, if you have mindfulness, you will know. Because when you attend to things that are unfit for attention, means you attend to it wrongly. What happened? The unarisen asava, they will shoot up, they will arise very strongly, like your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, your insecurity, your panic state and all those things. Then whatever that is already within you, the asava that has arisen, they will also increase. But if you attend to things that are fit for attention, then the Buddha explained, what are the things that are fit for attention? What are the things that are fit for attention? Yeah? Wholesomeness is one of them, but the major one. One of them. The major one is the Four Noble Truths. And the Buddha said in the Sabba Asava Sutta, the first particular way to fight defilement, he said if you attend correctly by dwelling into the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, if you attend to the first noble truth reality, this is suffering. These are the realities. Then you attend to the second noble truth. These are the cause of suffering, craving, born of delusion. Then you attend to the third noble truth. Suffering can end. Suffering need not be when there is wisdom. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. And this is cessation. cessation of suffering. You attend to this, then you develop the wisdom, the three turning. Then the last one is, this is the Noble Eightfold Path that will lead to the end of all suffering. So if you attend to this and develop the understanding of the three turning, then you say this Noble Eightfold Path and the second turning is to be cultivated. You attend to it, you cultivate it. Then the third turning, this Noble Eightfold Path has already been cultivated. That's why you attend to it through the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha said, immediately the asava, arisen, ceases to be. The unarisen cannot arise. This is how you abandon the defilement. Understand? It's only through the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. And this five daily contemplation is actually part of the second turning. Understand? Understand? Because this one constitute what? Contemplation. Understand? So this one is part of the second turning. Then there is another one. Third one is what? The Buddha always advised the monk to reflect. Huh? You heard of this anusati? Huh? You haven't heard of this? Buddha anusati, Dhamma anusati, Sangha anusati, Marana anusati. Why did the Buddha ask you to contemplate on the Buddha, the nine great virtues? Why contemplate on what is the Dhamma? Dhamma anusati. Then why contemplate? What are the Sangha? So that you develop wisdom and understanding of the triple gem. So that when you take refuge, you know what are you taking. So that you develop affinity to connect. So that whole cultivation can become very different. Then to contemplate on that is to develop the urgency, the wisdom to understand that your life, you can never be sure how long you live, understand? So that you develop the urgency to cultivate. Then contemplation on food, the four requisites they are offered to you, understand? That's why on usage and all those things. So all this is part and parcel of the teaching. Then this avoidance. This avoidance is what? What must you avoid? The Buddha said, if you don't avoid, it will lead to downfall. It will lead to the arising of asava. The unarisen and the arisen, they will increase tremendously. So what are the things you must avoid? Your closing puja every time you make aspiration. Avoid who? The foolish and the heedless. Understand? Then some more? Foolish and heedless. Plus what? These are already evil, understand? Heedless and foolish is already all the evil to them. Understand? The other one is dangerous situation, understand? Situation. Because in life, you cannot try to be a hero. There are a lot of circumstances or situations that can be very dangerous. And you don't try to be a hero. Yeah, this form of mind is very fragile, I tell you. You need a lot of heedfulness, a lot of understanding to actually bring about condition, causes and conditions for you to avoid all this. That's why I always tell you or share with you all, karma is what? When there is condition, it will arise. Understand? When you avoid the dangerous condition, or you avoid the condition for their arising, then there is no condition. The probability of it arising is very, very much lower. That's why with wisdom, you accord and flow, you will know what to do. Understand? Then you know how to avoid all this through wisdom, nothing else. Understand? Can you understand? Then when we come to restraint, this one is very important. The Buddha said, when you live your life, daily life, that's why you need to have daily mindfulness. You need to have this three-turning wisdom developed. 5 daily contemplation, everyday contemplation. Then when you live your life, every time when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel or think, you have a lot of wisdom and understanding that will allow you to have restraint. Understand? If you are not restrained in what you see, what happens? Huh? Nowadays, internet technology is very fantastic. Isn't it? If every day you allow the kid to play, hopefully they play games. If they go into pornography, I tell you, their whole thinking and thought is all in that direction. And what happens if they do that? The unarisen asava, they will shoot up like anything. You got an index for it, understand? The arisen one become worse, understand? That's why you cannot see things without restraint. That's why the 8th precept, there is one part. You don't go and dance and what? Sing and see all those things. Understand not? Well, it will make you heedless. Understand not? So you have to restrain. Understand not? There's a precept are all about restraint. I undertake the training rule not to kill or cause harm to fellow living me. You need to restrain. Understand not? You see somebody, you get angry and violent, you want to whack the fellow. There is no restraint at all. Understand not? So how can you live? These asava, defilement, they are very powerful. They are both latent and hidden. And also the one that is very active on the surface. Violent type. Spontaneous type. So these are the one that is born of habitual tendency. That's why when you see something, you react very fast. Whatever your mind is inclined, that thing will actually get what they call accelerated. Understand? Get like, become more strong. Understand? So when you listen to something, let's say, nice music, if there is no restraint, there is no clarity, you develop the other extreme. You have attachment, clinging, craving. Then what happens? Let's say somebody switch off that music. Sometimes your son change channel and want to see something else. You get very angry, and or your wife or your spouse. What do? Without restraint, you get angry and so on. So that's how all the asava, all the latent tendency, they come out. Understand? But you read the sutta, you cannot understand, I tell you. After I read for you, maybe after I explain the meaning come in. You cannot link. You don't know how the teaching come about. You will go and do all those fantastic meditation, and you think that is what knowing and seeing is all about. And you will be trapped. Because it is not about all those conditions there that allow you to see very minute and very penetrative things. It's about in daily life, in the midst of life, without the conditioned mind, without the samadhi and the concentration, with a free mind, where all your latent tendencies are not suppressed, you go and live your life. You subject yourself to all the tests in the midst of life, when you work, when you are doing your daily chores, when you are with society, when you are with your fellow community, you put the test. Then you see whether this latent tendency or this asava or kilesa, they are still active or not. That's why you don't cultivate noble eightfold path. If you don't have this ability to live accordance with Noble Eightfold Path, means Noble Eightfold Path is a part of you. You are still far away from what they call noble ones or enlightened ones. So these are all in the sutta, in the teaching. So this one, restraint, now you know. Every sense experience, you have to exercise restraint. Because when you undertake the training rule to keep your precepts, the 5 precepts, the 8 precepts, the 10 precepts, or the monk's precept, or the nun's precept, they are the same. You have to exercise restraint. Then you can develop wisdom. That he will not afflict you. Asavak will not arise. Otherwise, they will keep on arising. And they will keep on becoming defilement. And the evil roots, the hindrance, will keep on arising. Then no amount of meditation and retreat can help you. Because in your daily life, you are not restrained. All this we are talking about daily life. How you put your attention when you see something, hear something, smell something. This one is when you reflect and contemplate. Every day you do that. Every moment, every instant. But when you see something, at the moment of seeing, it's very important. That's why the Buddha teach this one. You heard of this word? Yoniso manasikara. What is this word? This is wise. This is attention. So wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Without this, the Buddha said, you will have problem. That's why in the sutta it's mentioned, the destruction of asava only happens in one who sees, or who knows and sees. Then he asks, see what and know what? See with yoniso manasikara. The Buddha mentioned very clearly. You must see and develop understanding. Means understanding, the direct seeing and the understanding. Means knowing and seeing. You develop the wisdom through the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. Understand not? When you develop this wisdom already, it means you have understanding. Understand not? Then when you have understanding and you see, what happened? You have yoniso manasikara. Understand not? And then asava cannot arise. Those who don't have yoniso manasikara, asava will become very, very strong, very powerful, and you cannot deal with it. So now understand, huh? Can follow. So first, second, done. Third one, endurance also done. Just now I say, like when you are in a country, let's say Ermesan, we went there. The temperature is actually very nice. But at the summit, they call Jingting, the summit there. It's very cold, very cold. But you don't feel it because with mindfulness, with the faith, with the sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya, there was so much joy, so much peace, so much stillness and tranquility. The energies are very strong. The environment, the condition are so conducive. And because of that, you don't feel it. You don't need to endure. Endure here means, if let's say, as a monk, nobody offer you. Actually, for Theravada, do you know, if you don't receive offering, you cannot eat or no. Understand? It can be as serious as that. I was told by one of the monks who told me, I think Achan Jagaro, he said throughout his, don't know how many years of monkhood, I think nearly 20 years, he only got 2 days no offering. And he has to endure it. Because after 12, he never eat. Of course, he drink. Understand? So, endurance means, like in the sutta is also mentioned, when you are in the forest, when you are cultivating, when the wind, the rain, that's why the 4 requisites, if people don't offer, you don't have. You have to endure. Understand? If your parami are good, you receive, then you can make use. When you make use of them, you must understand their purpose. That's why you have to reflect and contemplate on the 4 requisites. The offering that people give to you. The 4 requisites, you are familiar with. requisites. Sorry. What are they? Huh? Food? Huh? Ah, yes. Rope, huh? Shelter and medication, huh? Medication. You have to reflect, Anasa. These food are offered by people who are very sincere, very generous. So you should rejoice in their wholesomeness. To be worthy of the offering, you have to cultivate, understand? No? That's why you have to reflect. Then this food is not for you to like develop craving, understand? No? And also this food is not for you to like beautify your body and all those things, understand? No? So everything is clearly actually stated in the monk's rules. The purpose of food, how you reflect, how you contemplate, and to be worthy, what must you do, and all those things. Then similarly, robe, the purpose, yeah? To cover your private part, all those things. Then to ward away the rain, the cold, and flies, and all those things, understand? Insects or whatever. Yeah. So when you understand their purpose, you have a lot of gratitude towards those people who can offer it to you so that you can use it appropriately, so that it is conducive for you to develop the cultivation. Then because of that, there is symbiosis, because you are worthy of offering. It's a field of merit that is immeasurable, limitless. So all this, you will start to understand. Then the purpose of shelter, to ward against bad weather and other things, so that you can have conducive environment to cultivate and meditate. Then medicine is when you are sick, huh? For you to actually recover, so that you can in better state of health. Huh? Nowadays include vitamins, multivitamins and all these things. Then the other one is avoidance. We already said, huh? To avoid the foolish, the heedless, those that bring about downfall. Understand? Foolish, heedless include all those gamblers, drug addicts, yeah? All those that do nonsense on us with a lot of negative tendency. Yeah. Then dangerous situation, I already explained. Yeah? You avoid dangerous situation. Like you see cobra, yeah? You don't go and be a hero. Oh, I meditate, I got metta. I tell you. Unless you're really sure what you have. Even if you are very sure, don't try to be a hero. The Buddha said, you can, you have to avoid condition for things to happen because you never knew. Certain life you may be out of ignorance. You join a group of people to go and kill snake. Understand? You may never know. When I was very young, I almost become one of them. One group of us in a village, one of them saw one snake. Then he go and look for bamboo. Last time, very easy to find bamboo. Then he start to attack the snake, and the snake was wounded. Then everybody go and like kill the snake. Now, I almost took a stake like that because as a kid, you think it was fun. No? But the moment I hold that thing, my hand shiver. Then I felt something I cannot do. Then I just put it down. Then I just couldn't do. Yeah. Then I went home. Yeah. So certain condition, if you don't have the good karmic inheritance or past cultivation understanding, you can have situation where you also through ignorance and delusion cause all this killing. Then when you are not careful, you try to be a hero, you reap what you sow. You kill snake will kill you. These are conditions made available for it to happen. So all this avoidance is for you to develop understanding. Because under the five daily contemplation, I didn't finish. Huh? First three is only about your body getting old, getting sick and die. Fourth one you reflect is separation from loved ones and whatever possession that you hold on to dearly. Last one is what? Law of karma. you are born of your karma, head, your karma conditions, whatever, you are what you are. And from there, that first right view, you will know why the Buddha advised you to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. Then how to avoid all evil, train your mind to be aware, to be heedful. Then how to purify your mind, develop the three turning, three turning wisdom. Then how to avoid all evil, keep your precept. And how to keep your precept? Through mindfulness and heedfulness. So all the teaching, they are all interconnected, interlinked, and they will fall into place when you understand them. That's why these three turning of the Four Noble Truths, five daily contemplation and anusati, these are the real meditation. Here, the three turning include the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? And it includes the four foundations of mindfulness, seven factors of enlightenment, dependent orient, everything is inside there. Where nothing is apart from this Four Noble Truth. Understand not? So this is the real meditation. And to do this meditation, you only need to have the five spiritual faculty that will bring about the condition for the hindrance not to be there to hinder you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calm, and inner awareness to cultivate heedfulness. That's why they are all connected. Then after avoidance is what? Removal. Removal is like your four right effort. The unarisen hindrance or asava when they arise. Means like sensual desire, ill will, together with delusion. What must you do? You must abandon them. Right effort to abandon them. Then right effort to prevent it from arising. That's why you must cultivate in this way, through mindfulness, through heedfulness. This one you need to abandon, because a reason already, understand? No? Then later on when you reflect, contemplate, and your wisdom very strong, very stable, then you can, at the moment of sense experience, before they arise, this wisdom, yoniso manasikara, will enable you to prevent it from arising. Then, even when you see pornography or very, very disturbing type of show, inside, still, silent, no reaction at all. Understand? Because there is wisdom. It's not deluded by all this external phenomenal form, vibration. Nothing can stir. We are no more delusion. The form and mind is no longer deluded. Understand? So this remover is more or less like your four right effort. Eh? Then the last one is, the Buddha said, if after all this, you have to finally cultivate. He said, removal via development, cultivation. Cultivation of the seven factors of enlightenment. Okay, can I understand? Huh? So far, okay. I read to you the sutta now. So that you can develop better understanding. Let me have a drink first. This Sambhavasva Sutta, the summary of it, the Buddha said, Bhikkhu, I say that the destruction of asava is for one who knows and see, not for one who does not know and see. Who knows and see what? The Buddha said, wise attention and unwise attention. Means yoniso manasikara and ayoniso manasikara. When one attends unwisely, unarisen asava and arisen asava increase. Asana. When one attends wisely, unarisen asava does not arise and arisen asava cease to be. See, this is the final summary. That's enough. Then he said, Bhikkhu, there are asavas that should be abandoned by right attention. There are asavas that should be abandoned by restraining. There are asavas that should be abandoned by usage. And there are asavas that should be abandoned by enduring. And there are asavas that should be abandoned by avoiding. Then finally, there are asavas that should be abandoned by removing. Oh, there is one more. Then the last one is, there are asavas that should be abandoned by developing or cultivating or cultivation. Then the Buddha continued. He said, the first one, asavas that should be abandoned by right attention, by attending to things that are fit for attention. Yeah. So the Buddha gave this example. He said, what are the things that are unfit for attention that he attends? He said, they are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen asava of sensual desire in him arise. The arisen asava of sensual desire in him increases. The unarisen asava of becoming arise in him. And the arisen asava of becoming increases. Then he said, the unarisen asava of ignorance will also arise in him. And the arisen asava of ignorance increases. So these are things unfit for attention that he attends to. And what are things fit for attention that he does not attend to? They are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen asava of sensual desire, being and ignorant, does not arise. Yeah. Then likewise, the arisen one sees. Yeah. This is how he attend unwisely. Yeah. Listen, the Buddha gave example one, not I quote one. Was I in the past, so and so? Was I not in the past, so and so? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what did I become in the past? What shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be? Oh, this one already spoken. Eh? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future now? Is it? Having been what? What about the present? Thus, am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? So all this is a like thought projection into the past and future to arise fear, worry, anxiety. Like during occasion when you are diseased or confronting the first noble truth reality. So the Buddha refer all this to self-doubt, such that this doubt arises in a person attached to the personality view of sakkayaditti, self-delusion. When he attends unwisely in this way, the Buddha says, the view of self exists. And to him, they are like very true and established. Then the verse is, the Buddha said, it is this self of mine, because they will come to this view, is it? I read to you the whole thing maybe better. He said, when he attends unwisely in this way, one of the six views arise in him. The view self exists for me arise in him as true and established. Or the view no self exists for me arise in him as true and established. or the view I perceive self with self arise in him as true and established, or the view that I perceive not self with self arising in him as true and established, or the view I perceive self with non-self or no self arising in him as true and established, or else he has some such view as this. You listen, huh? This is wrong view during that time. It is this self of mine that speaks and feel and experience here and there, the result of good and bad action. But this self of mine is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, and it will endure as long as eternity. This speculative views, bhikkhu, is called the thicket of views, the wilderness of view, the contortion of views, the vacillation of views, the fetters of view, fettered by the fetters of view, the unthought ordinary people, person, is not free from birth, old age, suffering and disease and death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. He is not free from suffering, the Buddha said. Then the Buddha continued to emphasize on the danger of this self-delusion, thinking that this atta, there is a permanent unchanging entity which they call the soul that transmigrates from one life to another, that is responsible for your thinking, your speech, your action, and everything that you do. Then he continued, he said, bhikkhu, a well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble one and skill and discipline in the Dhamma, who has regards for true men and skill and discipline in their Dhamma, understand what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Since that is so, he does not attend to those things unfit for attention, and he attends to those things fit for attention. Here we come to the very important one. He said, what are the things that are fit for attention? He said, he attends wisely. This is suffering. This is the cause of the origination of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. All this he attends wisely. When he attends wisely in this way, three factors are abundant: personality view, doubt, and adherence to rites and ritual. Means the first three factors severe. And this is called the asava that should be abandoned by right attention, so that you can become sotapan. Then after that, the Buddha continued. So this one is another version which I got from another place. Right attention, attending to things that are fit for attention. Like this is the first noble truth of dukkha, that explain clearly the realities of life and existence. He attends wisely. This is the origin of suffering, craving, conditioned by delusion. He attends wisely. This is a cessation of suffering, leading to enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana. He attends wisely. And this is the path leading to the cessation of all suffering, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. He attends wisely. When he attends wisely in this way, three fetters are abundant: personality view, doubt, and adherence to rite and ritual. So rooting out self views and attachment to rites and ritual and doubts leads to the first stage of sainthood or sotapan. So this Sabbasavasutta, they are very meaningful. Then asava to be abandoned via usage, this one also very good. What asava bhikkhu should be abandoned by usage? Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely uses the robe only for protection from cold, for protection from heat, for protection from contact with flies, mosquito, wind and sun, and creepy things, and only for the purpose of concealing the private part. Reflecting wisely, he uses alms food, neither for amusement nor for intoxication, nor for the sake of physical beauty and attractiveness, but only for the endurance and continuance of this body, for ending discomfort and for assisting the holy life. Considering, thus I shall terminate old feeling without arising new feeling, and I shall be healthy and blameless and shall live in comfort. Reflecting wisely, he uses the resting place only for protection from cold, for protection from heat, for protection from contact with gadfly, mosquito, wind, the sun, the creepy things, and only for the purpose of warding off perils of climate, and for enjoying retreats. Reflecting wisely, he uses medicational requisite only for protection from arising afflicting feelings and for the benefits of this body that is needed for cultivation. Then all this, the Buddha explained very clearly. Then likewise for abandoning, endure. He said, what asabak bhikkhu should be abandoned by enduring? Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely, bear cold, heat, hunger and thirst, and contact with gladfly, mosquito, wind, the sun, the creeping, endure ill-spoken. This one I didn't share with you. Is it endure ill-spoken, unwelcome words, and arisen bodily feeling that are painful, racking, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, distress, and menacing to life, while asava, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not endure such thing. There are no asava, vexation, and fear or fever in one who endures them. These are called the asava that should be endured. The reason being, our consciousness are trapped inside this physical form, anasana. Whatever that this physical form undergo, like in your five daily contemplation, the first three, sometimes in the forest when you have this disease, especially malaria, can be quite miserable. Suddenly very cold, suddenly a lot of heat and all those things. Then pain and a lot of what they call not easy to endure. Then without medication, not easy. And many monks, they just endure through. You read those, what they call, books that monks experience. Especially the biography of Ajahn Mun. You guys read a lot of instances where he survived, I think, two or three times malaria. No medication. They just endure through. Then things that are abandoned by avoiding. This one I will have to read to you. What asava bhikkhu should be abandoned by avoiding? Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely, avoid a wild elephant, a wild dog, a snake, a stump, a brevel patch, a cham, a cleave, a cispid, a sewer. Reflecting wisely, the word is always reflecting wisely. He avoids sitting on unsuitable seat, wandering to unsuitable resorts, and associating with fools, bad friends. Since if he were to do so, wise companion in the holy life might suspect him of evil conduct. While asava, vexation and fever might arise in one who does not avoid this thing. There are no asava, vexation and fever in one who avoids them. This is called the asava that should be abandoned by avoiding. Then by removal, abandon. Asava to be abandoned by removal. What asava bhikkhu should be abandoned by removal? He Here, a bhikkhu reflecting wisely does not tolerate the arisen thought of sensual desire. He abandons it. He removes it. Does away with it and annihilates it. He does not tolerate an arisen thought of ill will. He does not tolerate an arisen thought of cruelty. He does not tolerate an arisen thought of evil unwholesome state. He abandons them, removes them, does away with them, and annihilates them. Well, asava, vasection, and fever might arise in one who does not remove such thoughts. There are no asava, vasection, and fever in one who removes them. These are called the asava that should be abandoned by removal. Then by development, what asava bhikkhu should be abandoned by cultivation or developing? Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely, the key word is after wise contemplation and reflection, develops mindfulness, enlightenment factor, sati, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion and cessation and ripened in relinquishment or liberation of mind. He develops the investigation of Dhamma, enlightenment factor. The energy, actually is virya, virya enlightenment factor, then piti, then pasati, then samadhi and upeka, which are supported by seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and ripens in relinquishment or liberation. While asava, vasection and fever might arise in one who does not develop this enlightenment factor, there are no asava, vasection or fever in one who develops them. So these are the asava that should be abandoned by cultivation or development. Then towards the later part, as you cultivate, you see here they use the English word, supported by seclusion, dispassion, disenchantment and all those things. Cessation is correct. But actually your mind undergo differently. I remember that time. You will reach a point of understanding where this whole of your brain, sankhara inside there, is very different. Your mindfulness is so clear, you can see them. And because of your wisdom, so stable, you understand. Then you will come to know, very clearly, sankhara anicchang. Sankhara really suffering and dukkang. Then they are all not real. Condition arising, causal phenomena. They are all anatta and empty. And very clear. Then your mind will understand. Think also like that, don't think also like that. No point. Then the mind becomes very different. Then later on, as it move on, as you develop such sensitivity and understanding, every moment of arising of sankhara, even the moment of perception, moment of feeling, or moment of activity of mind, or moment of consciousness, that itself, the very fine suffering itself, you feel it so clearly. Then it like tell you, you want to continue to have suffering, you continue to use your thought. You continue to arise your thought. That's why cessation will happen. Everything. There is no fear, nothing on. There is this wisdom and understanding that is so powerful that you feel the fine suffering. They are so fine and yet so clear. Your mind is so... Then this thought cannot even move. At that moment, even the very moment of perceiving it or knowing it, no need to say go and think. Or go and arise any of this attention. It straight away cannot continue. Because that suffering state is so clear. Every moment of consciousness is suffering. Every moment of contact is suffering. That's why like the fire sermon. The eye is burning. Contact is burning. Consciousness that arises at contact is burning. Then feeling within that contact is burning. everything is burning. Ah, that is the real description, the fire sermon. That's why that fire sermon, when the Buddha spoke, so many got enlightened. Especially the non-humans. So with this, I think I will end the talk. You got any question you can ask? I was told there was one question. Brother Gan wrote me a SMS. You can read the question. Pass the mic to Brother Gan.
Brother Teo,
yeah.
Relating to the topic, some meditators think that one should cultivate until fourth jhana to see your past life, to know karma, or understand karma.
Yeah. Some more?
And help one on the path of realization. Do you think it is subject to individual practice or is encouraged by taking into consideration our modern life?
Okay. Thank you for that question. So what do you think after hearing this sutta? Is that what is being asked? Fit for attention or not? The Buddha explained it already. I don't need me to explain that. Is it fit for attention? And nothing to do with Honorable Truth, isn't it? You hope you can be like the Sammasambuddha after he got enlightened, fully enlightened. What did he do for the 7 weeks? He saw one birth, two birth, then countless birth. But he never say it's him, no. Understand, no? These are various segments of what he is. And he only developed this to understand how karma works, understand, no? How with this karma, it conditioned this type of birth, this type of being. He never said, oh, last time I so handsome, I so powerful, I'm the king, I'm what? He where got so deluded? He got tell you Jataka story, he was born as what? Understand not? Understand? That segmented life, he was born as what? It's not him, understand not? He never say it's him, understand not? That's why he said, you don't go attend to who am I in the past. Am I this or am I not this? What has that got to do with Honorable Truth? If you don't develop wisdom, you attend to all this ticket of views as to the sakayadity, the self-delusion. Oh, I was so and so. Last time I was such a monk. I cultivate until like that. I got the jnana, that jnana. So? You think you inherit everything? Of course, you record it in law of karma, understand? But whatever that is done before the awakening has delusion, understand? So if it's not fit for attention, you better focus on the Dhamma, understand? I do not deny that those who can develop all this concentration has this ability to read, see past life, all things. But what did the Buddha advise the monk? It's against the Patimokkha to exhibit any of this, understand? He said, all this psychic you should not touch, understand? But they are not conducive to the holy life. But if it comes as a byproduct, understand? And you can develop wisdom and understanding out of it, then it's okay. But you must know how to develop wisdom out of it. Because I can tell you, you are not careful, you go into the energy field or psychic field, you don't have your perfection like the great Bodhisattva and Sammasambuddha. Everything you see, you think your past life, you will get into big trouble, I tell you. They may not be what you think because thought projection. When you use thought without wisdom, thought can become very, very, what they call, shrut. There was one incident during the Buddha's time. There was one person who came and see Ananda. Then he wants to approach the Buddha, and he asked the Buddha, he said, the teacher, he got one teacher who teach him. He said, every life you make offering, slaughter chicken and offer to the king of Tawatinsa, I think. He said, you will take rebirth up there, yeah, and join him or become like. So this teacher, he got psychic, understand not? Then he checked. Yeah, for the last don't know how many birth, he actually took birth up there. Oh. And every life what he did was offer this type of slaughtered chicken and all those things. Then the Buddha checked. Then he will tell this guy, you go back and tell your master, if he offer one more time, he will go into Avijja hell. Because that karma, that condition, those birth were from another life, understand or not? Where he was a monk. He has this psychic, understand or not? He has this apinya, psychic ability. Then he saw there were a few monks, I think 8 or 9 monks, trapped in a desert storm or what, very cold and almost dying. Then he used his psychic to help them. And because of that, he got 9 births up there. Because of his craving, his desire, he wanted to be born up there. His wish is fulfilled. That's why you don't understand. You simply go and say, oh, I saw this. This must be from my past life. My previous life, I did this. That's why I 8 times also I take birth up there. So you think it's from that offering. Because you are not a Samasambuddha. Like you say, karma is very complex. You cannot rely on what you see. What you see is all thoughts projection. Your own dream also you cannot understand. You want to see past life. Not to say I discourage all this. It's your choice. Meditation is entirely your choice. You are free to develop any type of meditation. And I respect you for what you are. But be wise. Nothing free you except wisdom, understanding. Without knowing and seeing, understanding and direct seeing, leading to yoniso anasikara, wise attention at the moment of sense experience to live your daily life, you cannot liberate from the asava at the hell. The only thing is wisdom. Through the direct seeing you awaken, through the contemplative wisdom you understand, then you penetrate. Then you develop that type of wisdom that will protect you with every moment of sense experience, every moment of attention. The mind that has the wisdom and the enlightenment factor will understand. Without the enlightenment factor, if you do only jhana, what are the 5 jhanic factors? Yeah? What are they? The jhanic factor, cannot remember. I came and give a talk on samatha vipassana. What are the 5 jhanic factors? Those who do jhana, they will know. What are they? Huh? No place to write. Huh? Ah. Vitaka. Vitaka. Vichara. Eh? Piti. Sukha. Ah. Ekagata. These are the 5 jhanic factors. Out of all these, which one is the enlightenment factor? Ah. Only one, understand not? So if you develop this, where do you go? You're short of 6, understand not? Sati also not there, understand not? And when you are in these jhanic factors, when you are in this jhana, your mind is so calm, so still, understand not? The energy field is so strong. Everything is suppressed, understand not? All these latent tendencies, anusaya, they are all suppressed, cannot surface. That's why you cannot put them to test. You cannot know what is your actual mind state. You are like an enlightened being, I tell you. Whatever you attend, no movement inside, because I went through it before during the early years, about 30 years, maybe more than that. I entered university in 1975, 39 years ago. First night I meditate, I went into that. I went into the formless jhana and all that. Then I was stuck there for so many years. Because that time you really, the metta is so strong, your energy is so strong, your concentration is so strong, your mind state is so strong. And I didn't go into one-pointedness. I went into continuous mindfulness, and yet I was trapped. I did anapanasati from my path. Continuous mindfulness. Then I went into all this absorption. Then here, the heart here, like one cylinder of energy still. Nothing can move. Lightning strike also cannot even cause the slightest movement at all. It was so still. And that time really, wow, you think you cultivate already. Later on, when I graduated, 4 years later, I came out to work. When I touch money, then I don't meditate so often. Then I start to see this, start to stir, move. Then there is still craving. Want to become financially very successful, want to study law, want to do this, want to do that. I realize, what is going on? Oh, because the materialistic world. Then later I met this monk, very good, Ajayandra. He told me the highest meditation. So I thought something fantastic. He just say very simple. We choose aware every action, every movement in the present moment. Then I look at him. I was full of joy. No wonder I say, I've yet to do the real meditation. I've been doing anapanasati and I focus and I concentrate and never do daily mindfulness. Yeah, I never went into the four foundation. Then from that moment onward, I determined to do it. Then because of my past, I was very lucky. Within 2 weeks, the daily mindfulness came. Then I reversed my whole cultivation. I came out from that concentration. I relinquished everything. I start from square one. Then I go into daily life. Yeah. Then I realize daily mindfulness is not that difficult, very simple. And it can be done. It can be done. You must have the spiritual faculty, the faith. Then you must understand the teaching very clearly. It can be done. Okay? So hopefully you understand. So don't go and argue with people. Right and wrong, no meaning. Understand? We have to respect everyone for what they are. If they believe that is the way, we wish them well. So everything, if you know how to develop, it will lead to the awakening. Provided you are very truthful, sincere, and you have the faith, you will find a way. Because there are so many possibility to enlightenment. Everyone is different. As long as you don't have delusion, you are not driven by greed. You are not driven by wrong view. You will find the way. Dhamma is ever waiting for the sincere cultivator. They will actually develop the understanding and finally awaken. Okay, any more questions? Is it clear now? Good. Because this sutta is not easy to understand. I spoke this sutta, I think, 9 years ago. That time I was with another group, 2005, I think. There was another sutta, I forgot the name already. Also very interesting one, Vamika Sutta. He talked about the analogy of the anthill. That one is a very difficult sutta, either. Very few people understand one. Is it about the ants? Is it the mind? It's like this, what they call this anthill, I think, the not smoldering. Blazing and don't know what, day and night. He said the human mind, the Buddha said, is like that. When you are hitless with all the 5 mental hindrance, with all the defilement, with all the wrong view, he said, your mind is heedlessly blazing day and night. And I said, no. Means non-stop arising. So all this is all in the sutta. Then when you understand, it's very meaningful, very beautiful. But this sutta is not easy to understand. If you just read it, if I don't explain to you, you cannot link. You cannot link to this part. Then you find it. What is the Buddha trying to tell you? One moment, right attention. Next moment, restrain. Next moment, endure. Next moment, about the proper usage. Then next moment, avoidance. Next moment, removal. Then next moment, cultivate seven factor of enlightenment. Then you will say, why so mafan? Cultivate seven factor enlightenment enough. It's not like that one. There are certain wisdom need to develop through contemplation. Of course, when you are able to develop the seven factors of enlightenment, you will have all this contemplative wisdom and understanding very fast. But these are enlightenment factor that will bring about enlightenment. So the enlightenment factor of Dhamma investigation and sati, these two are most important. Without sati and Dhamma investigation, you cannot do all this tree turning. Cannot. Then, of course, without pasati, you cannot go into the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why virya and piti is a very important enlightenment factor too for you to develop pasati. Then with pasati, samadhi will allow you to see things as they are. Sati, pasati and samadhi. Pasati is the silent mind. Every time I tell you one, the silent mind, there is pasati. Stillness of mind, tranquil, still, unmoving mind. Then equanimity, born of wisdom, that is the real seventh enlightenment factor. The one in jhana is a conditioned state. That fourth jhana, equanimity, is a conditioned state. It's not the enlightenment factor, upekkha. The conditioned state held in that state of upekkha. The latent tendency are all still suppressed and so on. Because the energy field is very strong, it cannot come out. That's why you must go into daily mindfulness. You must release all concentration back to normal awareness and develop continuous mindfulness until upacara samadhi. And then you can actually penetrate the Dhamma. Then you will understand. With mindfulness, it will allow you to understand a lot of things. Dhamma investigation will be automatic. When you attend on the Four Noble Truths, the Three Turning, the Five Daily Contemplation, the three types of wisdom keep on arising, non-stop. Then the seven factor of enlightenment keep on arising. Then you start to see clearly dependent origination, Four Noble Truths, the Three Evil Roots, the Essential Dhamma, all become very clear to you. Then you have a lot of joy. Then you start to appreciate so much because the Buddha is so wise. So wonderful. Okay. We better end. 10:20 already.
Sadhu. Sadhu, Brother Teo, I'd like to extend an appreciation to you. Token of appreciation. Sadhu.